The NBA's second weekend of the playoffs was a lot better than the first, as the Clippers and Mavericks went down to the wire, the Knicks are in the driver's seat, and the Suns set as the first team out of the postseason. Is it time to discuss Kevin Durant's legacy? The NHL's first round has had its moments, but none of the series are even, and most teams look to clinch and move on to the second round. Another NFL draft is in the books. I'll go over the highlights and surprises of what took place over the weekend. And don't look now, could an 18th regular season game and Super Bowl on President's Weekend be a part of our future? Baseball in Mexico? How come the MLB didn't promote this? Plus a huge series in the AL East this week between the Yankees and Orioles in Baltimore. Fasten your seatbelts. This is going to be one wild ride on the sports roller coaster as we say goodbye to another month. It's all coming up. But first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right. No 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget the taste? Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reels here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular, just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reels podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reels as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. We're just a couple of days away from the month of May, so let's close out April with a rock'em sock'em jam-packed hour of sports chatter, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first timers, welcome aboard. And for those who have been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Thursday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And yes, the sports world is rocking for sure. And the NBA is rocking just as much, because when we look back at the previous weekend, there were nothing but duds. Yeah, you may have had a game or two that came down to the wire. First one in particular, I think of OKC and New Orleans. But other than that, you didn't have an exciting weekend, where this past weekend, and in particular yesterday, and I'll start there and then work backwards and then kind of set the scene for what we have over the course of the next few days leading into Thursday's podcast. But the NBA had a very good weekend. It was highlighted by the game yesterday afternoon. I get it, we could talk Knicks Sixers, and I'll get to them in a second, but the Clipper Maverick game, 3:30 ABC, that was just one down to the wire, mano a mano, just a back and forth. And mind you, this is coming from a first period where the Clippers got off to a 39-16 lead and then led by 31 points in the second quarter before the Mavericks started to chip away. And you saw the brilliance of Kyrie Irving, how he put forth a 40-point game and tried to carry the team on his back, even with Luka Doncic having a triple-double, but in foul trouble and that knee that's been barking. And as you could see him hobbling up and down the court, even in the post-game said that I have to do a lot better. I felt like I let Kyrie down and wasn't one of his best games, although he has been nursing this knee injury. But to think they came all the way back from a 31-point deficit to actually take a 105-104 lead late in the fourth quarter on that brilliant one-on-three where Kyrie just went up in the air, floated a layup that just dropped through the bucket. And you kind of thought to yourself at that point, if the Mavericks win this game and let's say win this series, that's going to be the crowning moment of the postseason to this juncture, to where Kyrie just brought his team from the dead to then take the lead and perhaps win the game. But then you had that big three-pointer by Paul George, who had a very good game, 33 points, coming off of that miserable performance that he had in game number three. But for the Clippers to then pull that game out and also give a lot of kudos to James Harden. Harden, who also had 33 points but had 13 points in the fourth quarter, was looking like the James Harden of the Houston Rockets, taking it to the basket, off the glass, floaters here, floaters there. Was brilliant. And he is just so polarizing because this is a guy, as we know, has never been clutch in big moments. And we see this more so early on in series when it comes to James Harden. But when you get deep into a series, whether it's a game six or game seven, the guy disappears. And if you're thinking, oh, come on, J-Reels, give him a break, all you got to do is think back to last year in the second round against the Celtics. Where was he in game six? And then obviously game seven, the guy was the invisible man. But for Harden yesterday, where the team needed it, they did not want to go down 3-1 to the Mavericks after losing game three, where the Mavericks performed great defensively and put up just a game that was from the 90s. And actually, the Clippers only scored 90 points, where Kawhi Leonard tried to give it a go, wasn't his usual self. In fact, he didn't even play in the game yesterday. So for Harden to pull his team out of from the dregs and would have been staring at a elimination game come tomorrow night, and for Paul George to also back up his poor performance, he only scored 7 points in game three, to have 33, and the Clippers go home with the home court advantage, best of three, and now we're going to see what's going to happen with Lucas Helt. You think he's going to play, that's not going to be a surprise, and they're going to revisit that series come Wednesday, because then you're going to have a scenario where game five will be Wednesday night, game six Friday, and if necessary, a game seven on Sunday. But that was just a thrilling game. And for Kyrie to be heroic in what he did to come all the way back from that 31-point deficit. And then you also had James Harden, the former teammates, I might add, of the Brooklyn Nets, to go at it one-on-one, it seemed. And then Paul George with the biggest shot of the game at 105-104 hits that three to make it 107-105. And then Harden makes a basket and one, 110-105, and that was pretty much the game as the Clippers get out of Dodge with a much-needed victory and the series even at two. And then even with the game Friday night, as I mentioned, with the Mavericks just dominating, and then you had that scuffle between what started out to be Russell Westbrook and Luka Doncic, where Westbrook pushes Doncic away, and then P.J. Washington comes over, and then there's a scuffle between those two, where both of them were ejected, and the Mavericks, who were flying high, and you thought with the quick turnaround, maybe if they could capitalize to get to L.A. up 3-1 and put themselves in good stead, even if they were to lose a game five, but to come home, they would still have the home court advantage. But that's not the case, considering what happened there yesterday afternoon. And just a rough loss there if you're the Mavericks and a Maverick fan, because when you take the lead after being down 31 points, and mind you, it's just the slimmest of margins, but for George to get that three, it almost let all the air out of the balloon, and therefore Harden punctuated it with his basket and one, and now you have a series there going back to LA tied at two. Now, the first game yesterday with the Knicks and Sixers, I know we could go back to Thursday night where Embiid dropped 50 points. And yes, should he have been thrown out of the game, grabbing Mitchell Robinson's ankle, falling to the floor there at the Wells Fargo Center? Now, if this was a game in January, that probably would have happened. But because the Sixers are down 0-2 in the series, and with everything that happened toward the end of that game, two on Monday night, where the Knicks got a gift, Tyrese Maxey, who was fouled on a couple of occasions, and I know Nick Nurse also tried to call a timeout, the coach, and with the rebound, Isaiah Hartenstein offensive to get kicked back to Dante DiVincenzo for the three, where the Knicks won that game, there was no way that Joel Embiid was going to get thrown out of this game. But as it was, very chippy, very tough, but for him to have a 50-piece to drop on the Knicks and survive to get themselves back in the series. And then yesterday was the Jalen Brunson game, because when you look at the Knicks overall, OG Anunoby, who had a good game, bunch of rebounds, played great defensively, also chipped in offensively as well. But you didn't get much from Josh Hart, although he had a ton of rebounds, but did not score. And it was all on the back of Jalen Brunson, who just carried this team to the finish line and willed his team to victory. 18 for 34, 47 points, which is a Knicks playoff record. Now think about that. You have Willis Reed, Clyde Frazier, Bernard King, Carmelo Anthony, Patrick Ewing. You have a bunch of these guys that you would have thought that they would have scored at least 50 in a playoff game, but they haven't even approached that. Jalen Brunson at the very top of the Knicks playoff point performance list. And with now the series shifting to Madison Square Garden, the Knicks could ice their series and put Philly off into the spring and summer bye-bye. And this is after what Joel Embiid said after game two, saying that we're going to come back and win the series, which I get it. He was emotional at the time, and I'm not being an apologist for him. But that is just an empty promise when you're facing a team that is a two seed, maybe not your conventional two seed, considering how the East broke down, where the Bucks just made it barely to the finish line and just were unable to secure that two seed on the final day of the regular season. And then you had a couple other things happen to where the Knicks now are looking ahead to close out the series, to not get on a bus to go down I-95 to play a game six in Philadelphia, and will await the winner of the Bucks and Indiana Pacers. And I guess I'll segue to that right now, because if you're a fan of the Bucks, and when you take a look at what has transpired here, not only over the course of this series, but just this whole season. And you can even date back to last season around this time, because if you recall, and I've talked about this on a podcast previously, where the Bucks last year at this time, they were in a street fight against the Miami Heat, where the series was tied at two, and then Giannis Antetokounmpo came back to play in a game five to where they had a 102-89 lead halfway through the third quarter. And then Jimmy Buckets, Butler that is, scored, I believe, 56 along the way to where the Miami Heat came roaring back, won game five to take a 3-1 series lead. And then in game five back in Milwaukee, the Bucks, on just terrible coaching there by Mike Budenholzer, especially when it comes to the inbounds pass. If you recall, in regulation, they had, I believe, 0.4 or whatever it was, 0.3 seconds left on the clock. The inbounds pass to where Butler just literally volleyball tipped it into the basket to tie the game, went into overtime, and then the Heat were able to win. Bucks go off into the night as a one seed to be a part of history, and the Heat, as we know, went to the NBA Finals. So then now, with Budenholzer, the coach, fired, you bring in Adrian Griffin, you go whatever it was, 41 games halfway through, where I think the Bucks were 30-11 or 31-11, whatever it was. They fire him because they had some poor defensive play during the middle of the season. You bring in Doc Rivers, who right now is a retread. And that 2008 championship with the Celtics, it might as well happen in 1908. So for Rivers to come in, and then the Buck ownership signs him to a four-year deal, this year prorated, to where he's going to make $40 million overall. He signed through 26-27, and then they were under 500 in the regular season. Giannis has a calf injury in the final week of the season. And then as you get into the playoffs without Giannis, here in a game three where the series goes to Indiana, what happens? Damian Lillard also tweaks his Achilles to the point where he didn't even play in game four. And now they're staring at a 3-1 deficit to go back home. And who knows what you're going to get if Lillard is going to come back or even if Giannis is going to make an appearance. And yes, Chris Middleton, although he did score 42 in game 3, but now you have a scenario where the Bucks are in complete disarray and you have no clue who's going to suit up, who's going to play, who's going to save their season. And think about that. I just detailed what has happened here over the course of the year, and I didn't even include Damian Lillard being traded to the Bucks from Portland and how his marriage in his first year in Milwaukee, how that's gone. Here's a guy that was thinking he was probably going to go to Miami to team up with Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, Heat Culture, Eric Spoelstra, South Beach, coconuts, palm trees, etc. And now here he is probably wondering, can I get out of Milwaukee considering that this has been a nightmare of a year? Who knows if he's going to even play in game 5? And this is your Buck season encapsulated in about 4.5-5 minutes that I've just detailed. And who knows? Chances are they may be out of the postseason here as early as tomorrow night. Can't make it up. Just a disaster of a season. And who knows what's going to happen? Maybe the Bucks show some pride, win a game at home before setting themselves up for an execution in Indiana for game 6. And I tell you, this bodes well for the Knicks. Because even if the Bucks somehow survive and win this series, they're going to have to fight tooth and nail and hard as hell just to get to the next round. And by then, the Knicks will be rested, raring to go. And same for the Pacers. If I'm Rick Carlisle and their crew and Miles Turner, who's played well here, back-to-back performances, 29 points, and you had that thrilling game 3, which went into overtime. But for Indiana, I won't fool around here. Let's get this game because it looks like the Knicks are going to put the Sixers out the pasture. And we do not want to even think about a game 6 or dare even say game 7 to where the Knicks will be well-rested, ready to go. And the Pacers are going to be pretty much on fumes going into that next series. So, Carlisle, we understand, champion coach with the Mavericks, been around the block several times. I'm sure that's the message he's hammering home to his team as they get set for a game 5 in the Bucks. We'll get ready to put them out when the time has come, but it certainly does look bleak for the Bucks, for the organization, etc. And I'm sure the ownership, the front office, etc. I think if you give them truth serum, I'm sure they regret the firing of Mike Budenholzer. And this comes off the heels of his brother perishing in a car accident prior to the start of the playoffs last year. So think about that. And this guy just won a championship 3 years ago. And when you turn back the clock 2 years prior to them getting ousted by the Heat in the first round, I mean, can't make it up. It has been an out-and-out disaster in Milwaukee here over the last year. So we'll see what's going to happen there. And then just to stick with the East before I talk about the Suns, because I got to get into them, and that happened late last night. But I forgot to mention the other day the Orlando-Cleveland series, and that is my bad. Hand raised high in the air because Donovan Mitchell and company got off to a 2-0 series lead with back-to-back 30-point performances. And then what happened? They went to Orlando, and I think they're probably stuck in the Magic Kingdom or maybe in the Universal on one of the rides there. And I'm not even talking about Donovan Mitchell. I'm talking about the whole team. Because they put up two clunkers in Orlando, got blown out, what was it, 121-83 on Friday or Thursday, and then on Saturday, another beatdown, 112-89, where Franz Wagner scores 34. Yeah, got them blown out 61-29 in the second half to get themselves even in the series. The worst Cavs loss in history, as far as the playoffs go, in that game 3, the aforementioned 121-83. Paolo Banchero is now trying to get his sea legs and get himself to see whether or not that he could come through in a game 5 in Cleveland. So that's the one series that's deadlocked, along with the Clippers and the Mavericks. But I get it, a lot less sexy considering that the Cavs, yes, they've been around the postseason over the last couple of years, but still don't really trust 100%, and Orlando's a new kid on the block trying to show and prove that maybe not for this year, but for years to come with that young nucleus and, of course, the coach Jamal Mosley to get that experience to see whether or not they're going to be built for this. Maybe not this year, but who knows if they could steal a game in Cleveland and maybe win a game 6 in Orlando. That could happen where they would advance, and then they would play either the Celtics or Heat, where I understand maybe I got to the ledge a little bit too soon after what happened there Wednesday night in Boston, but boy, did the scenes shift big time to where the Celtic defense clamped down on the Heat after that epic performance by Miami, where they hit 23 threes in game number 2, 9 for 28 in game 3. Celtic defense, bunch of turnovers, 24 points off of turnovers in the game. Pedestrian, but that's all they needed. Just some average play by Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, where they scored 22 points, but they got off to a big lead there, especially in the second quarter. They had a 61-36 or 63-39 halftime lead and cruised to a 104-84 win. But let's see what they do tonight. Because to me, the only way they cement what happened in game 3 is what they do tonight, which was similar to what happened, what we saw last week, where they blew out the Heat in game 1. All right, maybe the Heat get a pass because they had to play that Friday night playing game and the quick turnaround last Sunday. And then with the 3 days off, they were able to even the series. But let me see the Celtics. I'm not saying they have to do a carbon copy of what we saw there on Saturday evening, but can they go ahead and continue their dominance of this regular season to be the best team on record in the league, to go ahead and put themselves in a position where they could go up 3-1 and then just dust the Heat off into the spring and summer and move on to the next round, which will be either Orlando or Cleveland. And then out west, I'm going to go about the game last night before I get to Lakers-Denver. Do I even get into New Orleans and OKC? That's going to be a wrap. We talked about the blowout there on Wednesday night, and then the Pelicans had no answers for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and company as the Thunder are one step away from advancing to the next round. And no Zion, of course. Who knows if he's going to give it a go for game 4. That remains to be seen, and I'm sure it's going to be highly doubtful. But last night, where the sun set in Phoenix, where the Timberwolves, who had a very good game 3, where they blew out the Phoenix Suns 125-109, and then yesterday looked like the Suns may have pulled it out, or looked like they were going to pull it out, I should say, where Devin Booker scored 49 points, and even Kevin Durant had 33, but still, that output, think about it, when you have both of those players score 82 points and still lose, that's when you know it's been a bad year for you. And this was a Phoenix Suns team that I thought was going to compete for a Western Conference Final and even go to the NBA Final. Hand raised high in the air, I picked a Boston-Phoenix NBA Final. Well, you can forget about that. Swept by the T-Wolves. And I want to give the T-Wolves credit because they showed some toughness. They showed some grit in the game last night. And I understand they were up 3-0, so it's easy for them to kind of play a little bit loose and not be tight if they were down 2-1 or maybe even up 2-1 for that matter. But remember, this was a team that had a bunch of maturity issues 2 years ago, that series against Memphis where they had 2 20-point leads and they gagged those deficits to where they lost that series against the Grizzlies in that opening round just 2 years ago. And then now, here they are as one of the top seeds. You could argue they could have been a 1 seed this year, but they were the 3 seed. And with a Phoenix team that is depleted as far as their bench goes, but we know with the big 3 that they have, including Bradley Beal, we thought this could have been minimum a 6, maybe even a 7-game series. But boy, I'm sure a lot of people, including yours truly, were wrong. Because for Anthony Edwards to have that performance last night, 40 points, the big posterized dunk that he had over KD, his idol, and even throwing flowers, Kevin Durant, towards Anthony Edwards, saying that he's the one player in the league that he loves. He's going to follow him not only throughout the rest of this postseason, but of course throughout the remainder of his career, especially once Kevin Durant is going to be exiting stage right, because we all know Anthony Edwards, what is he, 22 years of age, and he has his whole career in front of him. And I'll get to Durant in a second. But for the Suns to have this type of performance, a team that made it to an NBA final, I understand different cast of characters, because that was more Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton campaign, guys like that, where this is a different Suns team. You did have Devin Booker who was on that team, but this is a team that's in complete disarray. Because think about this, you have 3 guys that are locked in, where Kevin Durant still has 2 more years left and $106 million on his deal. Bradley Beal has 3 years and $151 million on his deal. And oh, guess what? Devin Booker going into this season, his Supermax kicks in for 4 years and $221 million. So you know what that means? You're not going to get anybody on this team unless you somehow, some way get one of these players off the team. And if you do that, you're going to have to pay a big price, because you're going to pretty much just have your roster, in shambles if you even decided to trade away an aging Kevin Durant or a Bradley Beal who can't stay healthy and Devin Booker, who is your homegrown player and pretty much the centerpiece of your team with the Supermax kicking in. He's pretty much your only trade asset. But then again, are you going to do that if you're Matt Ishbia, the owner of this team, who wanted to come in here cavalier to be, oh, I'm bringing in Kevin Durant, I'm going to sign this guy, I'm going to do this and that. But now your cupboard is bare. You do not have what it takes to build a championship roster. And I get it. He wanted to make a splash. He wanted to do something to bring some life to that organization because they were this close, up two games to love against the Bucks in the NBA Finals 2 years ago. Granted, he wasn't a part of that, but he felt like, hey, let me throw my Bucks around and let me show my new owner syndrome where this is my shiny new toy. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And now the NBA kicked him swift in his ass. So you can forget about the Suns. Yeah, they'll have probably good regular seasons and maybe have a little bit of a run in the postseason, but they are not going to be built to be championship medal or any type of aspirations to get to an NBA final based on their roster. So that's what you have there. And I have to bring this up. And I have not watched any or even listened to anybody else when it comes to TV, radio, or other podcasts. And I get it that this may not be the day to pound on Kevin Durant. I'm not trying to pound on him by any stretch. But his legacy does have to come into question here. Because if he stays in Phoenix and everything that I just put forth with the way the team is constructed here over the next few years, this team's not going to win an NBA final. And other than the 2 years, which he was the best player on that team, winning those two back-to-back in Golden State, the 2017 and 2018 teams. And there's no argument about that. Not even Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, he was not the best player. Or those two weren't the best. Kevin Durant was. Not only just based on him winning the finals MVP in both of those years, but he was at the peak of his powers. I understand you can't take those two away, but that's all he has. He went to Brooklyn, how did that go? Now he goes to Phoenix. How's that going? We understand he's an all-time great. He's a top 20, maybe even top 15 player of all time. And we get it that that's what's going to be his legacy. But when you think about Kevin Durant overall and everything that happened, mind you, this is years removed, leaving OKC to Golden State, understood. But the end of his career, a lot of people are going to think about how it didn't play out in Brooklyn and how this is not going to play out in Phoenix. And maybe, just maybe, if you're the front office of the Phoenix Suns, do you even think about dangling him in a trade? Because nobody's going to take Bradley Beal off your hands. And I get it. 2 years at $106 million for a guy who's what? I think 34, about to be 35 years old. And he's still great. If I'm the Phoenix Suns, I would really consider trying to trade him. Because Booker and Beal, I get it. They're pretty much the same player. But if you could get someone else back or draft picks, because they've also blown their draft capital to hell, you got to do something. And if you're Matt Ishbia and company, you'd be smart to even entertain the thought and maybe even go ahead and try to trade Kevin Durant off your team. Because if not, you're going nowhere fast. If you're thinking NBA Finals, Matt Ishbia, your team, organization, and even their fan base, you can forget it. And then you have the Lakers who finally beat the Denver Nuggets, finally could at least hang their head on that after they lost 11 straight to them. And all you have to do is just think of the contrast between games 3 and game 4, where you had Aaron Gordon score 29 and 17, Michael Porter had a double-double, Nikola Jokic is Nikola Jokic, and Jamal Murray, although did not shoot well, but also contributed in his usual ways, where the Lakers got literally nothing from D'Angelo Russell, a fat donut. Austin Reeves contributed very little. And yes, it was all on the backs of LeBron and Anthony Davis, who's had a monster series. But they finally were able to get a victory based on the aforementioned AD and LeBron. You also had Austin Reeves chip in. I believe he had 22. And D'Angelo Russell finally made a contribution. And we talked about this at the beginning of the series, how those guys are going to be critical in order for the Lakers to have any success in the series. But now the scene shifts to Denver, where you're going to have a game 5 tonight. And you would think Denver is going to just try to dust them off and not have to worry about getting back on a plane to go to LA. Does LA have anything? Now, they've been competitive, and I can see them being competitive in this game, but once the Nuggets smell it, it's going to be it. And I would think the Nuggets will win tonight's game. That's all there is to it. I would think that, all right, we gave the Lakers one. Not that they gave it away, but the Lakers finally got their victory. Not to say that a LeBron-led team is going to use that as a moral victory. Like, hey, we finally beat them, so now let's just keel over and go off into the sunset. But for the Nuggets, I think they're going to win tonight based on just how they performed. I know Jamal Murray has not shot well in the series. I would think home cooking, the altitude, they'll do a little bit better tonight, and they'll polish off the Lakers there in the opening round. And other than that, that's what you had. So you have a very interesting weekend, as I mentioned. I went through all the series. I want to make sure. Phoenix, Minnesota, Denver. Yep. Covered that all. So that's what you have there with the NBA. And let's look at the schedule here as we turn to tonight, where you have three games. Celtics and Heat, game four, 7:30 tonight. And then you have Oklahoma City, New Orleans, your game four tonight. Let's see if the Thunder will take care of the Pelicans. And then 10 o'clock, LA at Denver. Tomorrow, Philadelphia, New York is your first game at 7, followed by Orlando at Cleveland. If I said Orlando at Cleveland tonight, it's tomorrow, so my apologies there. NBA TV for that. Tonight's games are TNT, Celtics Heat, Lakers, Denver. NBA TV has Oklahoma City, New Orleans. And then tomorrow, like I mentioned, Sixers, Knicks, followed by followed by Orlando, Cleveland, and then Indiana, Milwaukee at 9:30. Wednesday, before we get to Thursday's podcast, Miami at Boston, game 5, TNT, New Orleans, Oklahoma City, if necessary, NBA TV, and then Dallas, LA will revisit their series after a couple days off for game 5 on TNT. Let me lace up my skates to go to the NHL, and not much of a wild weekend. Yeah, you had a couple of games that were just mind-blowing, especially that Vancouver-Nashville, and I guess the Canucks probably heard me chirping here in the New York City area when I talked about the possibility with Nashville winning that game too. And Canucks, although they had a big regular season, but I don't know. Is that a team that you could really bank on them maybe gaining a split? Yes. But getting those next two games, I don't know. Well, they did get game 3. 2-1, and then yesterday was just a game that the Nashville Predator fan, and I can't believe I'm actually starting over the Predators, but only because of the way the game unfolded, especially those final minutes. And that was just one that, even if I explained it to you, you'd be like, Jay Reels, you're making it up. There's no way this could have happened. The Predators had a 3-1 lead in the game 4, down 2-1. And with less than 3 minutes to go, the Predators were looking to get even, where the Canucks, who got a hat trick from Brock Bosner, they score a goal, or Bosner scores a goal with 2:49 left in the third period. Now, the Predators are trying to hang on to a one-goal lead. Vancouver has to pull their goalie to get an extra attacker. They do so. So what happens? Colton Sissons has a shot in an empty net. The shot that hits off the post. Wide open. Scores the goal. The game is over. They have a 2-2. Even the series. They go back to Vancouver. Who knows? They already won a game in the Pacific Northwest. Chances are they may be able to steal another one to come back home. Sissons hits the post. And then what happens? Bosner again. Johnny on the spot with 8 seconds to go in regulation. Ties the game. And just a minute two into the overtime, Elias Lindholm scores the game winner. The Canucks steal one. Literally stolen. Had no business winning the game. So Vancouver proves me wrong. Not to say that they couldn't win two games in Nashville. I'm not trying to say, oh, there's no way Vancouver's going to do that. No. But I thought, all right, they lose a game two. Nashville, that's a big-time crowd. I get it. It may not be Hockey Town USA in Detroit or the old Chicago Stadium. Look it up. Hockey fans, or even sports fans for that matter, or the old Montreal Forum, or the Spectrum in Philadelphia in its heyday. I understand it may not be that type of home ice, but Nashville does have that building, that arena, which they call it Smashville. But man, that was as bad and bitter of a loss that you're going to get if you're any hockey team or even any sport or whatever, because to have a two-goal lead with less than 3 minutes to go and then have a chance to ice the game, which you didn't, and then to score with 8 seconds left, and before you could even sit in your chair after you purchased that one beer, maybe they stopped selling beer in the third period, who knows, but let's say you come from the bathroom, you get a refreshment, you say, hey, this could be a long overtime, two overtimes, maybe three. We haven't had one of those games. Well, we had one game, which I'll get to in a second. But a minute or two in, game over. Ugh, and there goes the hopes of the Predator fan, because I doubt that they're going to come back from this 3-1 deficit. So to me, that was the craziest game of the weekend. But other than that, the NHL has been a flat-out dud. You had the Rangers sweep the Capitals. As you saw there last night, that the Capitals were competitive, where it was 2-2 into the third. But the power play of the Rangers has been lethal here. Artemi Panarin, who's been on fire, another power play goal. They've also scored shorthanded. They just dominated the Capitals, and no surprise there. The Capitals made it into the postseason as an 8 seed. You knew that they weren't going to be long for this postseason. And then this is even the more, I don't want to say disappointing, but maybe even the most alarming thing of all. Alexander Ovechkin, one of the game's bright stars. I get it, he's aging, 41 goals away from surpassing Wayne Gretzky as the all-time goal-scoring leader in NHL history. Not only did he not score a goal in the series in four games, he didn't even register a point. Now, I haven't watched every minute of every game, but I don't know if that's age. I don't know if that's because of all the work that the Capitals had to get into the postseason. They had to fight long and hard, scratch and claw, just to get that 8 seed and maybe ran out of gas. But the Capitals were, just like we thought, a team that was going to be sacrificial lambs to the Rangers as they just swept the Capitals out of the postseason and won there last night. And you have a lot of these series, even the Oilers beating the Kings, they blitzed them 6-1 on Friday night, and then behind Stuart Skinner in his first career shutout, beat the Kings 1-0, as the scene will go to Edmonton here for a game 5. Monster series for Zach Hyman, who scored 6 goals, as well as Connor McDavid, who has 10 points, 9 assists in the series. He had 5 assists in one game early on in the series. And can't forget Leon Draisaitl, who's also been dominant. So the Oilers look to see if they could close out their series against the Kings there. And we'll go through the schedule in a minute. The Avalanche, who have just bombarded Connor Hellebuyck, as he's arguably the best player on the team. But the Jets in their big season, and then closing out the season the way they did, and even winning the first game of the series 7-6, that to me was telling, because if the Jets are going to win a series, they want to play more of a low-scoring affair. And mind you, that game one was wild, where you had 6 goals in each of the first and third periods, but Winnipeg had that one goal in the second, which was decisive. And even though they had 6-3 and 7-4 leads in that game one, but they had to hang on to win game one 7-6. And since then, the Avalanche have literally been just that over the Jets, to where they've just blitzed them. And the Avalanche are just one win away from advancing, where they won 5-1. Valerie Nestruzan with just big-time performances here. And what could you say? Hellebuyck has been awful in net. He's given up 7-5. I think he gave up, 5 on Thursday night. And has not been his usual Calder Trophy dominant self between the pipes. Just shocking to see he gave up 6 goals there in a game number 3. So now the Avalanche, let's see what they could do to go to Winnipeg to cap off their series and not have to go back to Colorado to play a game 6. Let's see if Winnipeg, with their closeout of the season and being second in the division, having home ice, if they could show any pride and extend this series to a game 6. That we'll have to wait and see. Other than that, the Dallas Stars, let's talk about them as I continue my trek throughout the Western Conference playoffs. Now, we knew that the Stars were down 0-2 in the series, and they were able to get back in the series, where Wyatt Johnston had 2 goals, including the overtime winner, which was huge, because there was no way they could go down 0-3 in a series. They did that last year, if you recall, to the Vegas Golden Knights, but in a conference final. But they were able to get a huge win, and they needed it. This is a team that's a 1 seed, and chances are, looks like if they come back to win the series, they're going to face the Colorado Avalanche in the next round, the conference semis, but they still have a lot of work to do. I believe they'll play tonight. Let me check the schedule. I'll go through the whole schedule later, but I believe they're going to have a game four, which is going to be pivotal for Dallas to get back to the Lone Star State, even at two games apiece. They do not want to go down 3-1, but let's see what's going to happen. And yes, that's tonight, ESPN 9:30. But huge win for Dallas. Let's see if they could piggyback that performance with another defensive, and they still got to get their guys going, whether your name is Jamie Benn, even Jason Robinson. I know Noah scored a couple of goals in the series, or had the one goal there in game two, but let's see what's going to happen for the Stars in order for them to get back to Dallas even, because if they're down 3-1, chances are, and even though I have two of the final three games at home, but still the home ice will belong to Vegas, because even if they do go up 3-1 and lose game five, they're going to go back to the desert with the home ice there. Now let me turn my attention to the East here. I believe that's all the Western Conference Finals. I went Dallas, Vegas, Edmonton, LA, Colorado, Winnipeg, as well as, let's see, am I missing a series in Vancouver and Nashville? So now I can turn my attention to the East. And yes, the one series that had a double overtime game, I'll go to the Islanders right now. They showed a little bit of pride. Matthew Barzal finally woke up. He did not have a goal in the series heading into game number four, and they lost game three where they were down early 2-0 and they had to scratch and claw to come back. They made it 3-2, but they weren't able to get the equalizer as they lost the game three, and it looked like they were going to get swept here, but they were able to save face. They did win a game four in double overtime, as the Islanders now will have to wait till tomorrow, and maybe the extra day will help them. So can the Islanders win a game five in Carolina? I think they can, based on their performance in game two, where they had a 3-1, and they were up 3-0 in the game, but they were up 3-1 in the third period, and then they just fell apart there before losing 5-3. I would love to see the series go back to Long Island for a game six, and then you never know, but I don't think so. I think Carolina, even with them having the extra day off, I'm sure they're going to do whatever it takes to not breathe extra life into an Islander team that if they do come back home, maybe they could steal another win and go back to Carolina for a game seven. But to me, that would show a lot more about Carolina than it would be the Islanders. Now, granted that the Islanders are similar to the Capitals as a team that is a big underdog, not expected to go far. So if the Islanders do bring it back to a game six, and I did talk about this last week, to where could the Islanders win two games. And as it was, it should have won two games because they should have won game two, let's face it. But obviously that's not the case. But let's see whether or not the Islanders could push it back and bring it to Long Island for a sixth game. I think the Hurricanes are going to win game five. And if they were a team that was just, what, 1 point behind the Rangers for the top spot in the Eastern Conference, they won't fool around. And to me, it will mean a lot more from the sake that if the Islanders do win that game, maybe it's an indictment on Carolina, maybe taking the Islanders lightly or not being well focused. Well, that will have to wait till tomorrow night to see. So that's what you have there. And the Lightning were able to show some pride, winning 6-3 after losing in game number three. And that was a tooth and nail game, to where I thought that with the Panthers taking a 2-0 lead, let me go back to that game, in fact. That was a game where I thought that the Lightning were going to win and maybe put a little pressure on the Lightning. But as it was, give it up for what Tampa did, because because they were back and forth. They actually had a 2-1 lead in the game, but then the Panthers then took the lead, and even though the Lightning tried to come back, cut it to a one-goal deficit, and fought hard there to try to get the equalizer there at the end of game three, but they got an empty netter there late by Matthew Tkachuk, and then the Lightning doubled up the Panthers in a game number four where they won 6-3. And let's see if the Panthers, similar to the situation with the Hurricanes. Now, I get it that the Panthers, who beat the Hurricanes and swept them last year in a conference final, they have maybe a little bit more of a pedigree. But let's see if both the Panthers and Hurricanes could close out their series in their building and not fool around to have that go to a game six, to where both of those teams have to go on the road and pump some life into those opposing teams' buildings to see whether or not that they could even push it to a game seven. So to me, Florida and Carolina on that same trajectory to see whether or not that they could close out and not have to be that team that you have to wonder about moving forward on whether or not they don't have that killer instinct to close out a team when they have a team down, in this case, 3-1. And then the final series is Toronto and Boston. And Auston Matthews, could somebody earth to him? And I understand he had a big game too, but he's done nothing in the two games in Toronto to where the Bruins could close out their series against the Maple Leafs. And this is a movie we've seen before. Mitch Marner, although he scored a goal in game four, but has been invisible, which has usually been the case in big games when it comes to Marner. And even though I know Tavares scored a goal and Willie Nylander has been hurt, and their goaltending situation is not great, but the Bruins look to see if they could put the Leafs out of their misery and win a game to advance to the next round, which in all likelihood would be against the Florida Panthers, and that'll be a very juicy rematch of last year's first round, as we know how that unfolded between the between the Panthers and the Bruins. But the Maple Leafs, looks like it's going to be another first-round exit, another disappointment. I get it. When your big guns aren't going to perform the way they usually do, especially in a regular season where you had almost a 70-goal regular season performance by Auston Matthews, but now who knows what's going to happen with him. And for a Maple Leaf team that can't seem to get out of their own way and advance as far as they possibly can to at least get the organization and the fan base geeked up to a point where could they make it to a conference final or even a Stanley Cup final, which they haven't seen in the likes in 6 decades? As it is right now, this is what the Maple Leafs are going to be up against. And right now, it looks like they're going to be out of this first round. And I'll take a look at the schedule here as we move forward. Tonight, 2 games where it looks like you're going to have Florida play the first game, 7 o'clock, Tampa at Florida. That's interesting because you have a double dip there where Celtics Heat at 7 and Tampa, Florida at 7. So a little bit of a hotbed down there for one team staving off elimination and the other one trying to avoid the brink of elimination there. So Tampa, Florida at 7, Dallas at Vegas, as I mentioned, at 9:30. Then you have 4 games tomorrow, starting off with Toronto at Boston at 7, New York at Carolina at 7:30. That's on TBS. Toronto, Boston, ESPN. Colorado at Winnipeg at 9:30. Nashville at Vancouver at 10. So 7:30 and 10. TBS, ESPN is Boston and Winnipeg hosting their games. Then on Wednesday, you'll have Dallas at Vegas, which will be a game 5 for sure. But then you have Vancouver, Nashville. Who knows if that's going to be a game 6. But you will have Edmonton. Excuse me, I got ahead of myself here. Hold on. Wednesday, you do have Florida at Tampa, which could be a game 5 or game 6, excuse me. We got to wait and see. Vegas at Dallas will be a game 5, as we know. And then LA and Edmonton will be game 5 for sure, as they'll take a couple days off. And that's your NHL schedule leading into Thursday's podcast. So there you have it. Now, let me put on my helmet and shoulder pads as I go through the NFL. And do I even get into what Roger Goodell said on Friday with Pat McAfee? I will save that because that is news that has come down the pike here where it's not official, although the owners and Roger Goodell are mulling it, and you know they're going to approve it as far as the owners go, but now it's going to be the union. I'll get to that in a little bit. But as far as the draft goes, you had a lot of drama later on or in the middle of the first round than you did early on in the first round. And I have to say, it led for a very ordinary first round. When I talked about this on Thursday, I thought that maybe New England would entertain the thought of trading down, maybe with the Giants, as there was rumors about the Giants trading up to draft Drake May, the quarterback from North Carolina, who I would have stood away from. But Drake May, for everything that he has said and done throughout the course of this weekend, and I'll get to that in a second, but New England stood pat. We knew that Caleb Williams was going to go to Chicago, and a lot of people thought Jaden Daniels was going to go to Washington, as what happened. And for New England to maybe trade out, drop down, another team moving up, maybe even the Vikings were to move up as they had 2 number 1 picks in their back pocket. Denver looking for a quarterback themselves. Could they have moved up to 3? They probably would have had to cost them a lot considering they only had 1 first-round pick. I believe they traded up and got another one later on in the first round, but no, as a matter of fact, let me think about that again. No, that's Denver. Yeah, Denver, I think, just had that one pick. We know Minnesota had the two. But they stood pat and drafted Drake May, and May brought it on. He says, I'm going to New England. I'm ready. He brought his girlfriend, who I heard that goes back to the seventh grade, and brought his friends, his family, etc., and is already making New England his home. So, yes, for the Patriot fans out there, I'm sure they're pumped up, ready to go. And I'm not going to try to compare to Mac Jones by any stretch, but Mac Jones came from a program at Alabama that came off of a national championship. Granted, he had Devontae Smith, he had Jalen Waddle, he had top-flight receivers, Najee Harris, etc. And in North Carolina, he did not have that. I think he had the one wide receiver who went late in the first round, which I'll get to. But Drake May, let's see how that era is going to go to kind of wash away the Mac Jones, even the Cam Newton era of yesteryear. So after that, it was pretty much, eh. Marvin Harrison went number four to Arizona. Joe Alt, the tackle, went to Los Angeles. And there were even rumors about the Chargers thinking about trading Justin Herbert to Minnesota. Or I even believe the Patriots also kicked the tires to see whether or not they could trade for Justin Herbert, which you knew there was no way that was going to happen, especially with Jim Harbaugh there as the coach. And then you had a couple of trades where J.J. McCarthy was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings as they flip-flopped with the Steelers, who picked the offensive tackle that they needed in the worst way in a Troy Fatanu. And the Steelers chose three of the first five picks, offensive linemen, which was great for them, and they needed that in the worst way, especially with Russell Wilson, you would think, going to start off at quarterback. And if they signed Justin Fields, who the Steelers declined the fifth-year option, so he's going to pretty much play out this year. But I would think they re-sign him, and it was smart for the Steelers because even if the Russell Wilson experiment does not go well, and let's say Justin Fields, might as well call him Justin Wilson because that could be the template for the year depending on how Russell Wilson performs in Pittsburgh. But you may see Justin Fields at the end of the year, and who knows? But that's what down the road. I digress. But they stockpiled with some offensive line talent that they needed. They also drafted a center out of West Virginia, another offensive guard later on who's a bull. So let's see if that works out for them. But the Vikings get J.J. McCarthy, and I said they flip-flop, not with the Steelers. You see, I got ahead of myself, people, because I was just geeked up by the draft and what they did. They flip-flop with the Jets. And a lot of people thought the Jets were going to trade Brock Bowers or draft Brock Bowers, as I'm all just over the map here. Take a deep breath. So the Jets, they were able to get an offensive tackle, which they needed themselves, because Brock Bowers would have been the shiny gift there to bring in a tight end who has all the ability and all the talents, understood, but they needed to get some reinforcements on that offensive line. As I mentioned there, with the acquisitions that they had this offseason for the O-line, they're long in the tooth. Yes, they're good by name, but are they going to withstand a 17-game schedule? That remains to be seen. But Olu Fashanu, the kid from Penn State who they had to get, 6'6", 319. You could just plug him in right there to protect Aaron Rodgers' blind side or maybe even the right tackle's position. So that's where the Jets had to go. And for the Jets to trade with the Vikings so they could get McCarthy, that was big. The Broncos ended up drafting Bo Nix. Maybe a little bit of a reach, but they needed a quarterback. So good for them as they get Bo Nix there in the, what was it, the 13th pick overall. I believe it was 12. I'll take a look at that in a second. But your first round, that's how it pretty much played out with the quarterbacks. As we take a look here, yeah, Bo Nix went at 12, and then Brock Bowers went the following pick to the Raiders there at 13. Other than that, yeah, we could go through a lot of these picks. I know a lot of people thought the Eagles did well. They got the corner they needed in Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. Another weapon for Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville for Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver out of LSU. Terrion Arnold, the corner out of Alabama, goes to Detroit, and they need cornerback help in the worst way, so that was a big deal there. Then, as I look at the bottom of the draft, I know that the Bills, who need a wide receiver in the worst way, Gabe Davis of Jacksonville, as well as the situation with Stephon Diggs going to Houston, but for them to trade out of their pick with the Kansas City Chiefs And then the Chiefs, they drafted Xavier Worthy. That was the guy who ran a 4.240, one of the tops during the combine, and just adds another weapon for Patrick Mahomes, which they, I don't want to say desperately needed, but certainly needed to get another wideout with some speed. Maybe a Tyreek Hill light. We'll have to see what happens there. But they trade out, and then Buffalo then traded out of that pick, which was weird. And the other pick that went, I thought it was North Carolina, so that's my bad. It was actually South Carolina. Xavier Leggett, the wide receiver there from the Gamecocks, who also with South Carolina, a quarterback went later on in the rounds, and I'll go through that in a sec. But the Bills, who were trying to get some wide receiver help, and I'm sure they did so in the draft, if I go through their whole draft board, but just a very so-so ho-hum first round. I'm not going to go through every single trade and what happened, who moved here, who moved where, who moved up, who moved down. We'll be here all night with that, or all afternoon, morning. As I look at my watch, it's 11:05 a.m. But other notables of this draft that I'll take a look at here before I move on to baseball, and also we get to Roger Goodell and what he said about what could possibly come down the pike as far as an NFL season expanding in a Super Bowl. But you had Spencer Rattler, the aforementioned South Carolina. He, by way of Oklahoma, a guy who a lot of people thought could have been at the top of a lot of draft boards if he stayed in Oklahoma and had a big arm, etc., but went in the fifth round to the Saints. And he also drafted Kool-Aid McKinstry, for what that's worth, for New Orleans. So he goes by the Bayou there. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., his father, the longtime Eagle. What did the Eagles do? They drafted him in the fifth round, so kudos to him. The Jets with a very interesting pick in the fifth round, drafting Jordan Travis. If that name rings a bell, it's like, wait a minute, I know that guy. Yes, he of the Florida State Seminoles, the guy, if he didn't break his leg, chances are they would have been a part of the college football Final Four and the semifinal if he was healthy. And remember, they were undefeated going into after the championships and after everything that the Seminoles did this year. But because Travis was out and the committee did not pick them, well, Travis is now a fifth round pick of the Jets. And that's interesting because he's a guy who's small and has ability. He could run, escape the pocket, improvise, try to find the open receiver. Is that a pick that maybe the Jets could bank on? We know Rodgers is going to be the quarterback this year. Who knows if Travis is going to be the backup? I would think he's going to probably be a third string quarterback in their depth chart, but could he be a project? Could he be a guy that would learn under Rodgers and maybe 2-3 years down the road be your starting quarterback? So that was a shrewd pick by Joe Douglas to see whether or not his ability, and not only that, being able to learn behind the future Hall of Famer, that could bode well for the Jets down the road. So that was a very intriguing pick. Joe Milton, a guy out of Tennessee with his build like a linebacker, and for him to be drafted by the New England Patriots, a lot of people think, whoa, wait a second, what's going to go on here as far as drafting Drake May and then you bring in Joe Milton? Hey, that's another guy that you're going to bring in, sixth round pick. I know the New England Patriots fan knows their ways around sixth round picks, a la Tom Brady, but that was one that, all right, you're going to take a flyer on, maybe, not to say he's going to compete for a starting job, but with his ability, could he be a guy that maybe could be a backup down the road? Or if Drake May does get hurt, could he be thrust into the starting lineup on the center and maybe do some things in the NFL? Big giant question mark, but also a very shrewd pick. And I know I didn't mention the whole fiasco there with number 8 with the Falcons picking Michael Penix Jr. And the Kirk Cousins camp was all upset about, why are they drafting a quarterback? What's going on here? Kirk Cousins got his money. He's going to be the starter. And even in the post-draft analysis or the press conference, they said that Kirk Cousins is our starting quarterback. This was a pick for the future. And I thought a very wise one at that, because after Cousins, you're going to have a guy come in. And I understand Penix, even with his health history, and he's 24 years of age, and a guy that could learn under Kirk Cousins, who's only won one playoff game, I might add, even with his $180 million contract and $100 million guaranteed. But for their camp to get up in arms is, whoa, why are you drafting a quarterback? We didn't know about this, so on and so forth. Relax. Even I said to myself, really? They're going to get bent out of shape? It's not as if Kirk Cousins is Tom Brady, that he already has all the hardware in the Super Bowls where he could demand what an organization is going to do as far as their future goes. Please, give it up. So just to spend a second on that. And then you had Mr. Irrelevant, Jalen Key, a safety from Alabama, across the river, New York Jets. Mr. Irrelevant, the final pick, and I understand that that's been going on for years. And when you look at Brock Purdy, him being the one guy, Mr. Irrelevant, who just came this close for winning a Super Bowl with the Niners this past year. So now Jalen Key, could he be a guy, could end up being a Defensive Player of the Year and maybe win a Super Bowl? Of course, it's not the same panache as the quarterback position, but let's see if Jalen Key could stick around and maybe be a part of a Jet defense that, as we all know, very good to begin with, but could he be a part of that? We shall see. Now, as far as the news that came down Friday with Roger Goodell, all I have to say is this. You knew that this was coming at some point where the owners and Roger Goodell, who obviously is the boss of the owners, where they are mulling the thought of an 18-game season. So they're going to take away one preseason game. So instead of three, it'll be two. And then for the extra regular season game to be played out to where they can extend the season into the middle of January, which means that the Super Bowl will fall on President's Weekend. Now, I understand. Brilliant idea. To me, it doesn't make a difference because people are going to call out the next day regardless, or either maybe even purposely take the next day off that Monday after the Super Bowl. But to me, I understand you don't want to tinker with tradition. I would think it'd be best if the Super Bowl is on a Saturday, because then you'll have Sunday off, but we get a Super Bowl Sunday, although it's still alliterative with Super Bowl Saturday, but you have the extra syllable. But with that being said, of course, how do I feel about it? I don't like it. I would rather it be just keep it at 17, and I understand I like the rounded number at 18, but another extra game extends the season. You know my thoughts about this. All you have to do is go back to the vlogs and my lifestyle vlogs here on my YouTube channel. Why I'm down, my 7 reasons why I'm down in the NFL. It even talks about why I didn't like the extension of the season. Obviously, it's not talking about an 18-game season or the Super Bowl on President's Weekend. But you knew this was coming. And for me, I don't care if it's on a President's Weekend where we're off the next day. I'm doing this full-time. It's not as if I have a 9-to-5 where I could, oh, I got to call in sick, or, oh, I'm going to put that day in. Doesn't affect me any which way, north, south, east, or west. So how I look at it is, it's another money grab by the league. It's just more to add to their coffers, as if they don't have enough money to begin with. And to the rank and file, they're going to approve this. So for the star quarterback, the pass rusher, the offensive tackle, the linebacker, the corner, those guys who already have their guaranteed money through the nose, they could care less. It's the offensive guard, it's the backup tight end, it's the backup safety, it's the punter, kicker, placeholder, long snapper, the special teamer. Those are the ones that are going to be even more affected. And think about this. The NFL, as impenetrable as I like to say, the shield that they are, and yes, they have a good union, but it's not the MLB union, where they already have their executive committee, the Max Scherzers, the Scott Boras clients that pretty much run the roost. And as we all know, they are far from the rank and file. And that's a blessing and a curse, because baseball, as we know, they need to go to a salary cap, and it'll never happen, which they should. But they have the strongest union out of any sport. So the NFL can't even compete with that. But you would think that this is going to get passed at some point. And they're probably looking, I think, at Super Bowl 61, which will be, they just finished, what, 58, I believe? I got my numbers all mixed up. So you still have 3 more years to even get to that. But you know, in the next year, year and a half, that's what's going to come down, because then they have to set themselves up for that year where I believe that Super Bowl is going to be in SoFi. So you know what's happening. Me, I wish it wouldn't happen. I wish it would have stuck to 16 games. The owners don't need any more money. The players, I get it, they're going to get an extra game check. And for everything that we've talked about here, that's what it's going to be. But longer season means longer wear and tear on the body, more injuries. We saw what happened last year with all the quarterbacks that went down by the wayside, the Aaron Rodgers of the world, and even Kirk Cousins for that matter, and a few other quarterbacks, the young Anthony Richardson. there were quite a few quarterbacks that went down. And that's not to say that's going to happen again in years to come, or especially when they go to an 18-game season. But buyer beware, people. The NFL is going down that rabbit hole of, we just want more money, more streaming, more content, more this, more that. And it could care about the fan. It could care about the players. All they want is the green. So now let me get to baseball as I wrap it up here. And this is the problem with baseball. I understand it's late April as I get into the batter's box here. It's late April. Nobody cares. Nobody's really following it unless you're a Dynamo baseball fan. And even yours truly, hand raised high in the air. I didn't know that there was a series in Mexico City this weekend. And Mexico City's going through a water drought unlike any other, where 22 million people are in peril there when it comes to maybe not having to even turn on a faucet just to get a drink of water, or to have to take a sink bath because of what's going on down there. But I digress. There was actually a baseball series between Houston and Colorado, where Houston, let's see if they could turn their fortunes around, because they went into that series, I believe, 7-19, and they got two games in Mexico City. I didn't watch any second of it. I don't know what the response was. I did see an interview with Jeremy Pena to my guy, AJ Ramos. Kudos to him. On the sidelines or as a reporter there for the two-game series. But why didn't Major League Baseball promote this? Or at least say, hey guys, I understand the NBA and NHL, they have their playoffs going on. And yes, it does happen to fall on the weekend of the draft. But there is a series in Mexico City as everybody wants to expand and promote the game elsewhere, so on and so forth. And we know about the London series, Mets, Phillies later on in June. But I had no clue that this was going on. So this is a disgrace for Major League Baseball to just kind of say, oh yeah, there's a series that's happening between one of the worst teams in baseball in Colorado and a team that's on the verge of being one of the dregs in baseball that were 7-19 coming into the series, and they didn't win the two games, so kudos to get to them. But they're in last place. So both of the teams came in last place, pretty much forgotten. Oh, by the way, this happened in Mexico City. Terrible job by Major League Baseball. They should know better. And that's just how it is. Major League Baseball, they're not going to promote their product or even promote the players for that matter. Yeah, you may see Shohei Ohtani in a commercial here and there, or in a T-Mobile commercial, you'll see Bryce Harper or Aaron Judge. But come on, you have a lot of big stars in baseball. And for whatever the reason, Major League Baseball is just saying, nah, we're baseball. We're 20th century, but we're not going to promote our product. Maybe because they don't feel the need to, or maybe they feel that baseball just stands on its own, dating back to its 20th century roots. It's 2024. Baseball's a far cry from what it once was 40, 50, 60 years ago. You got to get with the times, my guys. Come on, Rob Manfred, let's get with it. So that's what you have there as far as that series. But a series that we could sink our teeth into, a series that I'm going to bring up, that I knew for a week and a half. An AL East showdown, four games, starting tonight in Baltimore, Yankees-Orioles. This, to me, is more about Baltimore than it is about the Yankees. A, because the series is in Baltimore. That's number one. Number two, the Orioles, they played well. 17-10, tied in the loss with the Yankees. They're a game behind because the Yankees have played two more games. They're 19-10. And I want to check the pitching matchups. I'll look at that as I speak. But to me, this is all about Baltimore. And if they split, no harm, no foul. I think if Baltimore gets 3 out of 4, that would be huge for them heading into the latter part of spring into the summer. And for the Yankees, they played relatively well. I understand they've gone through stretches where they haven't hit. Well, they've hit the hell out of the ball the last 2 days, where they've scored 15 and 11 runs after losing the first game in Milwaukee on Friday. But for Baltimore, let's see what's going to happen here. They sent down Jackson Holliday prior to the weekend, who was 2-for-34 with 17 strikeouts. So they said, kid, you're not ready yet, despite the fact that he was tearing up AAA ball. And just goes to show you that you make it to the big show at 20, there are no guarantees or no automatics, as you saw that there. All right, so here are your pitching matchups starting tonight. Clark Schmidt versus Grayson Rodriguez, game one. Tomorrow, Nestor Cortez and Dean Kramer in your second game. Third game, y'all have Luis Gil versus Corbin Burnes. So the ace of the staff will get a taste of this maybe budding rivalry between the two organizations. And then your final game, I don't know if that's an afternoon game. I'll look at that now. Your final game, it's a getaway game, 105. Carlos Rodon, who did pitch well on Saturday. Granted, he had a huge lead in the game. The Orioles right now undecided as to who their starting pitcher is going to be. So that's what you have here, a huge four-game series, and then the Yankees go to Tampa after that. So, excuse me, that's the Mets. The Yankees will host the Tigers, who will play pretty well. Mets go to Tampa because I saw New York at Tampa, but I got the wrong New York team. So that's what we have here for the early part of the week. Monster series there, which you know I'm going to be all over as we get to Thursday's podcast. And then as far as the schedule for this week, St. Louis at Detroit. I know the Cardinals won 2 out of 3 against the Mets this week, and the Mets had to get a come from behind. They were down 2-1 in the 11th before they tied the game, and then Mark Vientos, who just came up from AAA, hit a 2-run homer for the Mets to salvage that series as they fumbled, bumbled, and stumbled all week. You have the Cubs coming in for 4 this week for the Met fan. Minnesota giving up. They played well. They won 7 in a row and break up the White Sox, who won 3 in a row. And think about this. The White Sox swept the Rays over the weekend. So this was a team that was, what, 3-22 or 3-23, and the White Sox were able to sweep the Rays, and they had the Twins coming in, winners of 7 in a row, as they try to get themselves on track to compete with the Guardians, the Royals, and Tigers in the division, if you can believe that, in this first month of the season. So you have that going on. Tampa at Milwaukee, Philly at the Angels, and boy, are the Angels plummeting fast. Atlanta at Seattle, LA at Arizona, which I believe is the first matchup between the two since the division series last year where the Diamondbacks swept the Dodgers into the offseason. Pittsburgh at Oakland. What else you got here? Washington at Texas. So that's what you have. San Francisco at Boston, if you want to look at that, maybe for nostalgic sake. Colorado at Miami, two of the worst teams in baseball. And the Marlins have just been, oof. Skip Schumacher, who was the manager of the year last year, made it into the playoffs. All right, they got swept by the Phillies in the wild card round. But boy, you talk about fading and falling away fast. 6-23. Let me just see here. They actually have the worst record in baseball by a slim percentage point, because the White Sox are 6-22 thanks to their sweep, and the Marlins are 6-23. Losers of 6 in a row. They just lost 3 of the first 4 to the Nationals, and the Nationals play them tonight in the finale of a wraparound series. So, tough sledding for them. And then, of course, the Rockies are 7-21, and Colorado goes to Miami, so they're going to have a battle of the worst teams there starting tomorrow. That is your baseball there in a big nutshell. And that is it. Nothing else going on in golf, tennis, boxing, MMA, anything else happening. That is it. A long extended hour comes to the close the books. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thank you so much for participating, throwing in your 2 cents to listen to what it is I have to say about what goes on in the world of sports. If you haven't done so, like I mentioned at the top, please subscribe, rate, and review. Throw me a few stars, write a review on your favorite podcast platform or on YouTube at my channel. Please subscribe there, like, leave a comment. Please, I'll be more than grateful if you go ahead there at JReels to subscribe, as I post content there daily. If you want to hit me up with a question, comment, or suggestion, you can do so at the following: Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the JReels Podcast, Twitter, X, JReels1, just the number, or the old-fashioned way, the JReels Podcast at gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to follow up with you guys and gals, because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood, it's in the DNA, as always, talking sports from birth. This is what I love to do, full-time content creator. You know this. No shock, no surprise. Keep coming back. Share with your friends, family, frenemies, foes, sports fan, casual, diehard. It doesn't matter, because I will continue to be here as long as I'm alive and breathing to share my passion, fire, fury, energy with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything that happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the JReels Podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. From the South Bronx, the South Beach, the South Center, the South Pacific, and all points beyond, peace, love, and God bless everybody. And until next time on the JReels Podcast, on the flip, baby.